The Fire Engineering Podcast is proudly sponsored by the Made for Life Podcast. The Made for Life Podcast is brought to you by Tenkata Protective Fabrics and hosted by Stuart Perry. The Made for Life Podcast unearths the work and experiences of real men and women who rely on protective clothing and equipment to get the job done. From firefighters to industrial workers to military personnel. Recent episodes explore the dangers and challenges of wildland firefighting, peer counseling for first responders, and the ins and outs of turnout gear. It's the Made for Life Podcast from Tenkata Protective Fabrics. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And now, the Fire Engineering Podcast.
Well, welcome to Fire Engineering Podcast. Tonight will be Firefighter Behavioral Health featuring Dr. Beth Murphy, who's a retired firefighter from Bellevue, Washington. And I will be her dash master, I guess, and the person that would be asking some pointed and questions related to our topic tonight, which is entitled Resiliency in the Fire Service. And the reason that we're going to be talking about this tonight, and Dr. Murphy could probably clarify this a little bit more, but a recent series of events occurred where I wrote an article for Fire Engineering in January 2020 of a colleague who posed a question about resiliency. And for me, it became a fairly intriguing topic because of my experience in a wartime situation, serving as a Navy corpsman with the Marine Corps, and my 30-plus years as a firefighter, starting out as a paramedic and retiring as a deputy chief, and then had the good fortune to marry my wife, who became Dr. Beth Murphy, and we've talked about resiliency and resilience factors in the fire service, and you know, how do we get there? And so, and the question that was posed in the article was, how do we become resilient to life, work, and the stressors of our jobs? And so, and then it kind of went into even more intriguing is not only the individual resiliency, but organizational resiliency to a loss of a firefighter or police officer in our community. And so this article apparently was read by a gentleman in England most recently who is doing a documentary on firefighter stress and firefighters' resiliency. And so we responded to his inquiry as to, you know, how did I become resilient in my trade? And, you know, how can we create resilient firefighters? And so, you know, my resiliency personally came from my, you know, growing up in upstate New York in a two-parent family with brothers. We used to fight all the time, you know, being in high school, college, and then off to the military, into the fire service, married, family with children, and now retired. And so when you take a look back on my life, I tried to describe it to the filmmaker as to it's, I think for me, it was a culmination of a series of events that sort of built on one another, where there are some wins and some losses. And I think at the end of the day, we sort of count our wins. We kind of review our losses and then hopefully we move forward on that sort of stuff. So one of the things that Dr. Murphy will be talking about today is resiliency of the firefighters. And so this is a question for you, Dr. Murphy. When it comes to facing an actual event challenging our resiliency, how do we measure an individual organization's ability to be resilient?
Okay, repeat that for me.
Okay. All right, that was a big question. I'm sorry, and a big lead-in. So welcome to the show, your show, of course. So the question is, when it comes to facing an actual event challenging our resiliency, How do we measure an individual or an organizational's ability to be resilient?
Well, I mean, so you're asking a question about how to measure, and I mean that's kind of a different. I think that's a little bit different than like identifying like resiliency in like the individuals and the organization, and how do we? I mean, it's more about like, how do you provide training, or how do you use people? How do you identify resilience, and how do you use it? I'm thinking that's kind of where we're going. I'm like, talk about measurement.
I would start start out building the foundation. I think that's a great way to go, and then attempt. You know, then we'll kind of answer the question, I guess.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, so I mean, so you opened it up by talking about this gentleman that read your article, which just honestly, like, just cracks me up when people approach John about psychological stuff, because he's the lawyer and I'm the psychologist. And pretty much everything he knows, he learned from me. but I did hear him give me credit, sort of, like, because, you know, he married me, so he's learned a lot. So resiliency is really just the ability of being able to bounce back. I mean, so it could refer to people, and it could refer to an organization. I mean, I'm sure that there are a lot of organizations that have really struggled after a big event. I mean, I think like maybe one of the biggest, most obvious one would be, you know, FDNY after 9/11, and, you know, they suffered like a tremendous loss. And so that would be a great place to look as far as, well, how does an organization like bounce back from something like that? And I think that they've done a pretty good job. Now, if we talk about like individuals, which often when, you know, when I get questions about this, and I think based on the question that you had received from the guy doing the documentary, is he was really interested in that personal resiliency and, you know, like, what is it and how do you help people get it? And he had mentioned something like, well, he wanted to know like what what your thought was on like stress inoculation as a technique, which people who know of that likely heard about it coming from the military, particularly like Navy SEALs or maybe other elite military groups. So it's like, I think when John posed this to me before, I was kind of like, well, it depends. and I think I stumbled around a little bit because it's a really big topic and there's a lot of stuff that gets rolled into it. And they're related, but not necessarily synonymous. So we'll talk about this a little bit. So we have resiliency, and then there's post-traumatic growth. So when we think about the mental health of the firefighter, it has been heavily focused on the negative side, I guess. And it's like the conversation had to start somewhere. So people needed to start talking about the impact that firefighting or the job of firefighter, regardless of what task you're doing, like that impact, so that you're asking somebody, a human being who has all sorts of stressors in their life, to take on extra stuff. I mean, things that most people would naturally run away from, things that overwhelm people, which is why they call 911. So now you have a very human being responding to these events that most people would be calling for help. And then they're dealing with their stuff and then everybody else's stuff. And there's so many things out there that we can't even begin to control. So if you think about it, a very small amount of what a firefighter does, or how do I want to say that? A firefighter's job is to take control of situations that people, most people would run away from or would need to call for help. And they ultimately have very little control in all the variety of situations that present to them. So it's like, how do you help that person be resilient so that they are not crumbling, or you know, maybe not crumbling, that's not really the right word, but feeling the impact of it. So, and the big thing is, you know, like developing PTSD or developing depression or anxiety, and the worst outcome of that would be a suicide. So taking their own life. So that's been the focus of mental health, is like all the bad stuff and recognizing all this bad stuff happens, and that firefighters are human, and what that means. And it means that you can only carry so much. And the training that you get in the fire service is about handling these emergencies. So basically you're trained to run into a burning building when everybody else would run away, because that is the survival mechanism that kicks in. And so it takes a toll over time. So not everybody seems to be impacted. And so that was feeding into how bad people felt when they were thinking about, well, I'm so emotional and I feel so bad and I can't handle this. Because this is an area that firefighters weren't getting the training for. And this is actually where resilience training comes into play, and where understanding post-traumatic growth and growth mindset. I mean, these things are then, this is important. So this is where we need to really start focusing, because the focus on your job is really stressful, and in conjunction with all the other stressors in your life, you're going to be a mess. That message really doesn't cover everything and doesn't help everything. And I've heard questions that maybe that actually can, I've heard people question, like, is this helping or is it actually hurting? So if your thought process is the job is really stressful and anybody who does the job is going to be stressed and they will develop PTSD, and that becomes the belief, then that actually could make people develop PTSD or at least develop some of those symptoms and feel less in control and less effective. So it's time to start changing that narrative. And I think that the question about resilience training is a good way to go in there. And so this guy presented something about, you know, like stress inoculation therapy. So it's like, is that enough? And I don't know if anybody knows what that is. But basically it is, it is a type of, program where you, basically will, teach people about the stress reaction and the effects of, that reaction on functioning and psychological well-being. and identify like how you might react to that stress, and then you teach techniques to counteract the stress reaction, and then put yourself in the situation of where you essentially put yourself in a safe situation that is highly taxing and difficult, but it basically exposes you to some semblance of what you might be exposed to during the course of your job, whatever it is. And then you deal with it. So I think basically it's like the first part is really understanding stress reaction, the factors that go into it, like your appraisals and cognitive distortions. And so as human beings, part of our innate survival mechanism is to make negative appraisals. Some research that has been done has identified that we have thousands and thousands and thousands of thoughts a day, and it's a huge number. But they found that 80% of those thoughts are negative. And so making that negative appraisal is something that when we are hunters and gatherers, that helped to keep us safe. And people probably have heard me talk about this before. It's like when in the distance you see a beige mound, it could be just a beige rock or it could be a lion. And our that negative appraisal that we default to would say that's a lion. And then we would steer clear of that lion. So, you know, the worst thing that happens if you're wrong is you walk a little longer, a little further or whatever. But if you appraise it as, oh, it's just a rock, and you decide to continue walking towards it because that's your shortest route, if it's really a lion, then you pretty much have ensured the end of your survival. So we have a tendency towards those negative appraisals. And so that translates into us being, you know, in modern day, being exposed to all sorts of stressors and us making negative appraisals about them. And that ultimately results in, you know, that negative self-talk. And then that negative self-talk is what contributes to or shows up as cognitive distortions. You know, like a common one would be like generalization. So it's like if one thing is bad, then everything around it remotely related is bad, or absolutes. And that's that I'm never going to be healthy, or I'm never going to have friends, or I'm always going to be lonely, or I'm never going to get promoted, or whatever. So, and there are several others. You can look them up and yourself, just Google cognitive distortions, and then you could check off all the ones that you make because we all do it. So, but that, you know, it comes out of our innate survival mechanism. So we need to recognize that and understand that that influences how we will respond in stressful situations. And that's part of that first part of stress inoculation. So understanding stress and what it does. The other thing, and I was just reading my husband's response to the guy that posed the question, and or maybe this was actually from the article, but you know, he learned about stress a long time ago. And so he talks about stress in terms of eustress or distress. And it's not quite that simple. Our body reacts to stress, whether it's good or bad. And how we make sense out of it has the greatest impact on how our body continues to respond to it. So if, I mean, simply stated, if you think stress will make you sick, stress will make you sick. If you think that stress will, that stress is a challenge and will promote change or growth, then stress will promote change. And that's actually the healthier way to go. If you want a very short, concise like on that, then listen to How to Make Stress Your Friend. It's a TED Talk by Kelly McGonigal. So you can find it on YouTube. Her talk is amazing, and it's right on point, and it's very direct. And she's a experimental health psychologist, and she spent the first part of her career telling people how stress would make them sick in an effort to get them to change behaviors and to do different things different in the face of stress or in the aftermath of a stressful situation. And she had her mind blown when she started learning about the importance of mindset. And so this is like kind of where education comes in. If you understand things a little bit differently than how your body ultimately reacts and handles it will be different. So it's like what your mind thinks, your body will follow. And so she talks about, how our thinking impacts how our body reacts to all these, all the neural hormones that are dumped into our system when our sympathetic nervous system is stimulated, so our stress response, and how just the way we think about it can change how our body actually physically responds. So it's, that piece is something that stress inoculation training is trying to get at. So it's understanding stress and then teaching how to deal with it. And so that might be like knowing that you're going to be faced with certain stressors and that it's going to have a certain impact on you, then there are things that you can do. And so you kind of pre-plan. So I guess it's a lot like when you go into a building and you do your pre-fire. So you take in the environment, you look at how it's built, you identify any challenges that could face you in different emergencies, and then think about, well, what could go wrong, either in the course of the emergency or because they didn't maintain certain things, and then you plan for what you're going to do in the case of, certain failures, for instance. And then you hopefully will recognize what you can and cannot change. And so some of the interventions that you might be thinking about would be, talking about like the pre-fire, you're going to have very specific fire-related plans. You're going to have plans for like if this is an earthquake and potential collapse, if there are people there, whatever. But for stress inoculation training, you're considering the environment that you're going into and the different jobs that you're going to have there and how stressors might affect you and what can you do to mitigate that. And so one is like looking at a problem. You're faced with the problem. So you need to solve that problem. If you are in a reactionary state, it's going to be difficult to solve that problem. So being able to bring your stress level down, which might be like learning breathing, like some breathing techniques, some relaxation techniques, some emotional regulation techniques, something like that, then you can, you know, work the problem. So what is the problem and what are possible solutions? If you can't change something, then accepting what you can't change. You learn to accept what you can't change and to change what you can. And I think that that's like part of the alcoholics 12-step program too. I mean, and there's a reason there. There's a reason that's there, and acceptance is a big piece of that. But in general, for everybody, acceptance is a big piece of that. And then what other interventions can you do? So some things may be passive, and acceptance is a passive type intervention. Some things may be very active. And so that's where you're, working the problem, so to speak. But you have to learn the skills. So skills acquisition is really important. And so if you're not used to doing relaxation breathing, for instance, then you need to learn. And learning several different ways of breathing is important. I've been surprised by the number of people that I've seen in my practice that don't know how to breathe. And breathing, as we get older, for a lot of different reasons, and being in the fire service and being under stress, there's a tendency to breathe where our chest rises, our shoulders rise. That's not a full breath. That's not a full breath. It does not fill up your lungs. And so when we're talking about breathing as a relaxation technique, we're talking about like inflating the lungs from the base to the top. And so that means that your belly is going to expand, the chest is going to expand, and your shoulders should stay down and relaxed. And I'm amazed at how many people don't breathe that way. So learning how to breathe is kind of the first place to start. And then learning several different ways of relaxation breathing. So there's police officers will use something called a 444. And that is something that I guess has been identified to help them relax and be able to shoot. Other ones is like a 4-6-7. And that's more of a sitting kind of relaxed focus type relaxation breathing. And then there are multiple variations on this. So it's learning which ones work for you, because that everyone's going to get the same benefit out of it. There might be other relaxation techniques that you learn and practice. And it really depends on the situation that you're in. And again, what's going to work for you. So you have to figure out what skills you're going to need and then learn them. Skills, techniques, that's a hard one. People have a hard time accepting what they can't change. I mean, especially firefighters, because they want to be faced with the problem. They want to work the problem. They want to solve the problem. And it's really hard to accept when you can't. And that's when I've actually seen a lot. So if you expect to be able to solve every problem, then you will start having your own problems, because you're going to find that the reality and your ideal of being that problem solver, there's going to be a big gap, and that's going to create some tension that you're going to have to do something with. But it actually is much better to learn acceptance, and that sounds easy, but that can be a tough one too. And so there's a whole skill set behind that. And then obviously any of the other interventions that you'll need. So, you know, it's like, what problems are you going to face potentially, and how do you actually resolve that problem? Because if you can resolve the problem, then you're going to feel good about that. And then you have to rehearse it. And so because we're doing this in a training setting, you don't want to put somebody in an environment where they can actually die from not doing the right thing. You know, so you want to create an environment that is close to what they're going to be in, but not exactly. So, you want to be able to have safety measures in place, and you want to be able to then practice these skills that you are acquiring and developing to help you with the aftermath, the potential of that stress reaction. And then you're going to employ, like when you get stressed in this situation, then you will employ whatever techniques you have learned. And then you'll have continued opportunities to practice. And visualization is really important. So visualization is actually really powerful too. If you think about neuroscience and building neural pathways, I mean, that's basically how we become good at whatever we do. And so you can do the same thing mentally. So mental rehearsal will help to lay down neural pathways the same way as actually doing it, or in a very similar way, I should say. So visualizing yourself facing these different stressful events and not just, like dealing with the event, but then after effects of that event. And then modeling, working with someone, so like having a mentor is really sometimes important here, because you can, if you have a mentor, basically you're learning from watching them. And so you're modeling and you're picking up information from watching them do it. And that then becomes part of your mental rehearsal too. And then repetition with anything, it's repetition. So, being in an environment that is close to what you're going to be working in and being able to visualize yourself navigating that environment successfully, and then going a step further is anticipating the effects of being in that environment on you physically and mentally and psychologically. So then you can incorporate your coping skills so that you can minimize the reaction on your body. Hopefully that makes sense. So, and it depends on the theory, but it's, some people look at it as a 3-step process and other people might look at it as 4, but it's basically the same thing. It's just that it might be broken out a little bit finer. So that's essentially stress inoculation training. And it is, in some sense, it's like in the fire service, you're training the saying, train like you fight and fight like you train. That is, one very important part. That's why you do that. If you are lax in your training, then when you are faced with that situation in real life, then you're going to struggle because it's going to be different. So if you're not using all your protective gear, for instance, and you train regularly that way, then that's how you're training. So there's a chance that when you actually have that event or a similar event, you might forget to secure a piece of your clothing, your PPE or something. So that important aspect. So train like you fight and fight like you train. And that's been a big part of the fire service training. It's a big part of the military training and the SEAL training. But it's like you're dealing with like the human condition and you're putting that on top of your own. And so the idea is that it's not just about doing the job and doing it well. It's about dealing with the emotional and psychological impact that that job can have on you. And this is where, in my experience, I've seen the fire service, and I can't really speak about the military, but the interactions I've had with the military, I mean, they're not any more likely to want to like face the emotions that come up around their job than firefighters are. So that's the other piece, is like training about, is it's not just the action of doing the job, but it's like the effects of doing that job. It's when you're dealing with people and you're dealing with them at their worst. I mean, we always say this, like people don't call because they did something smart. They didn't call because they're having a good day. I mean, they're having a bad day, and sometimes it's like the worst day of their life, depending on what happened. And so they're going to be very emotional, and it's actually okay for you as a responder to have emotion about that. And it would be very human of you to have emotion with somebody else having really strong emotions. Doesn't mean that you break down and cry with them right there in the moment, but it means recognizing that when you experience somebody else's human suffering, you will hurt too. And that's okay, because it means you're human. So the problem comes from, what do you do with that? And in the fire service, they don't really teach you what to do with that. And it doesn't have to be any real big convoluted thing. It can be as simple as recognizing it, acknowledging it, and sitting with it. And it sounds, sometimes it can sound really kind of woo-woo, really out there, but like sometimes your strong emotions just want to be recognized and seen. Just like we do as people, like we want people to see us and to acknowledge our existence. And sometimes that's what our emotions want, is just to recognize them, to name them, to feel them, and to acknowledge their existence. And then they're not as bad. They don't feel good, but they're not going to be stronger. They're not going to stick around for a long period of time. Talking about the different aspects of what you might feel, everybody's going to feel something different, and it really depends on their own life, their own experiences, their own exposure to things like that. And so recognizing that and helping people identify their strengths and weaknesses can help them develop strategies to deal with whatever they're faced with. So actually acknowledging that the job that you do is really hard, and that it's not a weakness when you find that you want to cry in the face of some other human being's suffering, is not a weakness, and it's actually okay, then that allows a tremendous amount of relief. And that's part of the stress inoculation training, really. I mean, and it's also, stress inoculation training is one thing. There's also stress inoculation therapy, and they basically like follow the same kind of steps. And the point is to get to that point where you can be faced with a variety of different stressors, and operate at the level, at a high level that you hopefully have been trained for, and then deal with the kind of the after reaction to it. And so from that mental health psychological perspective, we want to be able to do something with everything that we don't necessarily see. It's the stuff going on in your head. So that's the stress inoculation training. I have found that that training often in reality is more about just doing your job really well, and even though it's supposed to address your mental health and psychological well-being, it doesn't seem like it really does to the level that it's supposed to. And it just seems like there's something wanting there. And so I think that it really needs to be explicit in that training, and especially in the fire service, from my experience, because so much about doing the job and actually having a human reaction is often seen as a weakness. And then there's a lot of question around, I should have done this, or I should have done something different, or even like, why bother? Depending on the calls, like if you're seeing the same person over and over and over again, and it really seems like that person is doing a good job trying to kill themselves, but not actually succeeding, that can weigh on you too, where you don't think that you're making a difference anymore. And so it's not enough to know how to handle, and often this has to do with drug use and overdoses. It's like, it's not enough to know how to handle the overdose. You have to deal with that human reaction to that, and that question of, why bother? What am I doing? I'm not making a difference. So those questions, and those are questions that come up, and it helps to access those core beliefs and the negative thoughts and the cognitive distortions. So, and the answer to those questions in those circumstances might be as simple as you, in those moments that you see that person, you interact with them in a very human way. And it may be the only time that they're ever treated as if they're a person, for instance. It's the only time they ever have a connection, and I do recognize, yes, it is a distorted connection, but you're dealing with people that aren't very healthy to begin with. And so the answers to those things, the meaning you make out of those things, are not always, huge and earth-shattering. They could be very small. That kind of like takes me into like the next, kind of the other part of this is, like resilience. So the resilience is that ability to bounce back, and it's bounce back, but it's always not, you're not always feeling like you're bouncing back. And so you may be expecting to bounce back, but, It might take some time, and so it's being realistic about that. And then resiliency is not post-traumatic growth. I mean, those are two different things. So post-traumatic growth can come from being resilient. If you are a resilient person, then you may not experience post-traumatic growth. Because if you're resilient and you are handling things really well, and you're, looking inward, facing your emotions, feeling them, doing all your stress management stuff, your relaxation stuff. If you're making meaning out of bad situations, then you're a resilient person. And then you may not be you may not be experiencing post-traumatic growth. So post-traumatic growth comes from having your ability to bounce back challenged. So you have to change. You have to learn from it, and then you have to learn something different. And so that's where post-traumatic growth comes from. And so people who have their resiliency challenged, basically they're being forced to grow, or they struggle. So, and so those sometimes get used interchangeably, but they are different things. So, but that's ultimately what we want, is that we want to grow from the traumatic experiences that we have, and we want to become more resilient. So, and I think that the last thing, and I didn't really talk about it, and I hope I touched on the things that I really needed to touch on, but when I've talked about resiliency in the past, I've talked about three factors, and I honestly don't remember where I first read this, but one is, so it's the ability to be flexible, to learn, and to adapt. I think the fire service does a good job in teaching people to be flexible. That's part of the training. You know, you train, and you know, you tell the stories of the calls that you go on, and then you kind of learn to expect certain types of calls, and then you can respond to calls like that or things that are similar. And so I think flexibility is a skill that is present in the firefighters in the fire service. I don't think that an individual that wasn't flexible would do well in the fire service. And you may know somebody like that. Somehow they managed to get in. So flexibility is key. The next thing is learning. And learning is really important in being resilient in post-traumatic growth, and in having a more positive mindset of related to trauma and traumatic stress. So being able to not just be flexible, but then to look at what you've just been through and think about, well, what could I have done different, but not in a way that you are taking responsibility for how things may have turned out. So if the call didn't necessarily go the way that you planned, it would be one thing, you know, like in a PIA, you discuss the call and you know, you always ask, like, what could we have done different or better? And that's not about assigning blame or that somebody's more responsible than another. It's just that's that process of learning and growing. And sometimes that can be problematic in people who are not who are struggling, who are not as mentally healthy, can take that on as a defect. And so so there's a fine line there. And so you want to be aware of, like, well, how much responsibility are you taking? And so learning is not about taking responsibility or more than you need to. It is truly asking the question, I want to be better. What can I do different to be better? Not that you did anything wrong or you did anything bad. It's about, I want to grow. I want to be a little bit better. And if you did everything right and there is nothing conceivable that you can change and do better, that's fine. just, you know, kind of that act of looking at the process that you went through is part of that learning. Now, when things are, it's a lot easier to do this process when things are not really bad. And I say bad with air quotes because bad is defined differently from person to person. But those times that really hit people hard and it hits them like emotionally, it's where a lot of people might struggle because they cannot make sense of what happened or what is happening. And so it's not enough to be flexible and to learn. It's adapting, and moving to that adapting is where you go from learning and incorporating in that learning some sort of meaning. And that's not the same as like finding the silver lining, although it could be that aspect. But sometimes things are so horrible that it's impossible to find a silver learning. But I would challenge you that everything that you experience and everything you go through, you can learn something from it and use it for the next time. And in that process, you are adapting and you are making some meaning from it. So it doesn't mean that you don't have some feeling about it, that you don't have some strong emotion or you don't question it or whatever. It just means that ultimately you will make some meaning out of it. And it may be that it's something that for your lifetime you think about and it makes you sad. And that's okay. It's just, you know, how have you made sense of it and how have you changed how you've operated or how you think about it. And so that's growth. And that growth, you know, so we have post-trauma growth. So if you have that traumatic event, it's where you go through that step. You're flexible when you're there. You learn from it so that you can do something different or better. And then you adapt. It becomes part of your repertoire. That's one part. And then the other part, like in the bigger general overarching sense, is a general growth mindset. And that is a big deal. And that goes back to what I said in the beginning, is that what your brain thinks, everything about you will follow. So if you think that stress is bad for you, stress will be bad for you. And if you listen to that TED talk, she'll talk about that. And it's pretty mind-blowing. So if you think that stress is something that will make you stronger, then that's exactly how you're going to face stressful situations in your life. And you will grow. And, you know, you may not, you'll grow, but it may not be huge growth. It could be like a small growth. I mean, if you're a resilient individual, then your growth is not going to be leaps and bounds. But a resilient person has this growth mindset in that every time they face something stressful, they take it as this is a challenge. This is an opportunity. I am going to learn something from this and grow from it. And so people like that do a lot better. They're healthier. They tend to live longer and they honestly, they are better problem solvers because their brain stays engaged and they're able to work with the problem. So, kind of rambled through all this stuff. I mean, and it kind of creates this feedback loop, if you will. So, you know, we started out about the idea of resilience and stress inoculation and, you know, walked through what that was. And in each case, there can be like this feedback loop. So it's not enough to do stress inoculation training, it needs to incorporate mindset training. So, I understanding mindset, understanding neuroscience. So it's just taking it a little bit deeper, and then being willing to be uncomfortable sometimes. And that's that, you know, sitting in those really strong emotions. So when you're sitting with somebody and dealing with human suffering, being able to tolerate that and hold it and then let it go is a real strength. And so sometimes people have a hard time letting it go. Sometimes they have a hard time sitting with it. Sometimes people have a hard time facing it, acknowledging it, naming it, whatever. So it's important to recognize where you're at and what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are, and then to then learn how to use your strengths to bolster your weaknesses. So in training, there's a tendency to have a one-size-fits-all training, and any training that deals with any of this stuff should have some pieces of it that can be customized to the individual so that they can use their strengths. Because if somebody is taught, if you're taught the same thing, and that happens to be a strong suit for you, then you're not going to be interested. And then you might miss something that really could help you. So if you practice meditation, and you actually have a couple different techniques or understand different techniques, but maybe practice one, then spending a week learning how to meditate might not be most beneficial for you. But learning to do some shorter, like breath relaxation techniques, might be beneficial. Because you can't always 30 minutes to meditate. So anyway, that is hopefully touched on everything that I wanted to touch on. And I think that this all speaks to not just the job, not just while you're working in the fire service, but this is stuff to think about now. I can't think of a better example of a situation that we really have no control over than COVID. And so you're dealing with your job that has a lot of knowns and a lot of unknowns in a time where there are a lot of unknowns. And so tapping into your resilience and strengthening your resilience and growing from what this environment gives us is, I guess it's like, this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity to learn and to be better and stronger. So I think that's it for me. John, are you on?
No, I'm still here. I was just enthralled by your conversation. So I appreciate
the conversation
that sort
of
stuff.
One.
Yeah, you're talking to thousands and not millions of people out there in our listening audience.
Yeah, this is like this whole thing is like so stress provoking for me because I'm used to interacting with people, and I realize that I'm talking and I'm talking about this stuff and I'm trying to make sure that I stay focused and not ramble. And to make sure I tie things together. And I kept thinking, you're not responding. You're not making a comment. And then I realized that, well, I didn't give you much of a chance to do that. So.
No, you're on a roll. And I think you tapped in all of the points that we're trying to make today. I think one of the best, you know, comments of all the comments that you made, of course, is that talking about, you know, the call afterwards, when you're coming back and we're sitting around the coffee table, drinking coffee or just out cleaning the rigs. Just sort of talking about the event is very powerful, I think, for people's resiliency when it comes to maybe they face something that their fellow firefighters had not. And so it gives them an opportunity to kind of talk about it. Excuse me. And maybe get some feedback about, you know, did you do the right thing? You know, could you have done it better next time? And I think that adds to a level of resiliency as well to what we do as individuals, and certainly to the organizational's knowledge, you know, to put out a resilient organization. You know, how do we handle this sort of stress? And those individuals that contribute to the, you know, to the overall resiliency of our service. So thank you, Dr. Murphy.
I want to add, because of what you just said, is that it is good, you know, to be able to talk about the calls after. I mean, whether it's formal, like in a PIA, or informal, like in the rig going, you know, back from the call or around the table in the beanery, or even in, you know, like a debriefing, for instance. I think what often happens, because I've seen this a lot, like the guys that have come to see me are, and I don't know why it surprises me, but I mean, it's like people who go into the fire service tend to, not all of them, but it seems that there is, like, people have a high level of empathy, which is a good thing. But it's a bad thing in the fire service, because they don't teach you what to do with that. And there's a lot of messages in the fire service that empathy is bad. And bad in the sense that when you have empathy, you feel for the other person. Like, you connect with that other person's suffering at some level. And you have to be able to do something with it. And the fire service doesn't tell you it's okay to do your job and to talk about it and to actually feel bad. You know, it's like you're supposed to just kind of suck it up. You do your job and you suck it up. So the training is always focused on go do your job. You know, train like you fight and fight like you train. You do your job. Tell you what to do with that human piece, that emotional piece, the empathic piece. And so I actually have seen a lot of guys who are very empathic that feel like they're weak, that they can't handle it. I mean, and they've been shut down, like, oh, no, you know, it's like, it's not that bad. Or they've been made to feel bad because they've had emotion about it. So it's like, if we're going to be talking about it and we really want to build resilience and we want to have people be able to experience this post-traumatic growth, then we really need to allow space for the reactions to experiencing human suffering and acknowledge that it hurts. It hurts. And I think that that's one of the things that helped me a lot, is I learned a long time ago that I am very empathic. And anybody that knows me knows that. And it was a journey and a struggle to come to terms with that. And when I did, I really see it as a superpower. I mean, I think empathy is a superpower. It doesn't make you weaker. It doesn't make me weaker. It makes me good at what I do. And it made me a good firefighter. And I was lucky because I had a crew I could talk to. And I had you, John. I had my wonderful husband who knew the fire service, and I could come home and I could say anything and talk about anything. And you never made me feel bad for feeling emotional or crying even, you know, that's really, you know, these guys that I'm working with, they cry. I mean, they're crying. They're like good guys in my office or on my screen virtually that are crying, because they've never been allowed to do that after a call. Yes, they can talk about the call, but they're not allowed to have these emotions, and they just keep stuffing it down and trying to compartmentalize. And then all their little boxes, all their little compartments overflow and leak. And that is really what we don't want that to happen. So we want people to talk about it and to be able to acknowledge these emotions and to feel bad and to express how bad they feel, whether they want to shed a tear or just go, man, that really hurts and it sucks and I really don't want to have to do that again, but I know I'm going to. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be big and long and drawn out. I think that a lot of people have been trained to expect that if they're really emotional, and a lot of people are emotional, then they're going to have to go through this debriefing. And then you have a whole lot of people that are like, I'm not showing an emotion. And then they'll shut down other people who want to show emotions because it makes them feel bad. So, you know, that's not always the answer. Yes, it can be good, but it's not always the answer. Sometimes it simply is recognizing that you are sharing in human suffering. You're not immune from it. You are touching somebody else's human suffering, and it feels bad. And you can acknowledge that, and you can feel it in that moment, and then you can let it go. And that doesn't happen. I mean, and that is the simplest thing you can do. And when I share this with some of the guys, they're just like, no, really, what am I supposed to do? Right? No, there's more to it, right? No, it doesn't have to be long and drawn out. You can do this in a couple minutes. But you really got to be willing to touch and poke that painful part and to have a reaction and not to stuff it down. I mean, for a lot of people who see themselves as really brave and strong, it's like, why are you so afraid of looking at this emotion and poking it? It's like, do it, poke your emotion and let it out. I think that's a good place to stop.
All right. I agree. Well, I want to thank Dr. Beth Murphy for her enlightening presentation on resiliency. And I know that it's an issue that we hadn't talked about for a long period of time when I started out in the fire service. And now I think the modern, and I put those into quotations, fire service is taking a look at the health of the firefighter from a different perspective and then talking about those things that really do affect us. So thank you very much, Dr. Murphy. Thank you very much to Fire Engineering and Clarion Group and those millions of listeners out there who are firefighters and family of firefighters. Hopefully this session was valuable to you and your future in the fire service.
So thank with you that, all we'll for say, listening.
Yes, I'm sorry to interrupt. Say that again, Dr. Murphy.
Oh, I just said thank you all for listening, and good night.
And good night.